Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And a very special welcome to an old friend and much admired colleague with whom I have not been in touch for many, many years. And I'm really delighted to be reconnected with him, particularly at a moment when he is doing really vital work on two fronts, to the moon and beyond, if you will, what China is up to in terms of the militarization and dominance of space. His name is Paul Crespo. He is a former Marine officer and naval attaché with the Defense Intelligence Agency, the CEO of Spectre Global Risk, and perhaps most importantly, the president of the Center for American Defense Studies, and the managing editor of a new online resource, AmericanDefenseNews.com. You can follow his work, all of these outfits. Let me just give you the center's website as well, AmericanDefenseStudies.org. Paul Crespo, it's great to have you with us. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it's really fantastic to reconnect after all these years.
Thank you, and I hope it will be a very much continuing presence on board going forward. Paul, let's talk a little bit about what you have been personally engaged in now intensively in recent days on the ground in Afghanistan, specifically trying to help get people out of Kabul who are at great risk at the moment, whether they're Americans, whether they're military personnel, contractors, or Afghans who have been allied with us. Tell us about what you and your team have been trying to do to help in this, well, chaotic, is putting it mildly, but increasingly, exceedingly dangerous situation.
Yeah, a chaotic is definitely mild. I would call it catastrophic. And despite all the spinning from the White House, which is making my, you know, getting me dizzy because of all the falsehoods and the misinformation that they're putting out about this being an orderly evacuation. Yes, a component of it is orderly. The military and the U.S. government guys are doing their job, but the private effort, which is dealing with the most of the folks that the Biden administration is forgetting or ignoring, is a disaster because the administration has placed so many obstacles and made it so difficult for people like us to operate to get these people out.
Now, I keep hearing that, Paul. What on earth is going on that the State Department in particular apparently has really been an incredible obstruction to trying to help move these people out?
And then the State Department blames the Defense Department, and then, you know, where does the buck stop? Well, it stops at the White House. It's supposed to be in charge of both. So we've been operating for 9 days now with folks on the ground. I'm in D.C., but we have people on the ground and people throughout the United States, in Tampa and other places that are coordinating. And we've gotten out hundreds. I mean, I've posted on it and I've written on it at American Defense News. We've gotten hundreds out through Qatar and other places by aircraft. And we've had multiple aircraft leave the airport almost empty. We've had, you know, our people that have been vetted by me first and then other stages where they get vetted to prove that they're either Americans or resident, you know, green card holders or related to an American and worked with a contractor or worked as interpreters and translators and other capability or other manner, which makes them incredibly high risk to be executed by the Taliban. We've also lost people. I know we've had people, including a group of Christians that were trying to get out, that were slaughtered. I know people that were families were beheaded. We've lost contact with some people and we don't know what happened to them. And then we have the other ones who are crying constantly saying, you know, we've gone to the airport and they won't let us in. And now, of course, well, after our 13 Marines and sailor got killed by these savages, now, you know, it's almost going to be impossible to get through the airport anymore. And the Taliban, I call it the Taliban deadline because Biden, you know, is following whatever they seem to say, even though he arbitrarily chose it. I think he chose it in conjunction with them behind the scenes. That's my best guess. And the other thing is, I don't know if you saw, but, you know, Politico wrote about it. That, I mean, this is criminal. It's, and I think it's impeachable, but it's, you know, so as are a lot of other things. And I don't throw that term out lightly because I don't like the way it was done in 2000 and, you know, in the last administration. So I don't like to use impeachment as a political point. But when the Pentagon and the State Department gave sensitive personal information to the Taliban to supposedly allow them to get our people through their checkpoints so they could evacuate, they basically put a death sentence out on all these people. So the political report was, you know, they gave them out, you know, a couple of thousands for Americans and high at-risk Afghans who worked directly with American military and gave that information to the Taliban. And that to me is
a kill list. It's been described as
it's criminal. So that, you know, so we have people that have their on a death list. We can't get them through the airport. Once we send them to the airport and they're being blocked, that they're even more of a target because now they've been clearly identified as our people.
Yeah.
And then they get sent back and they're going to be targeted. So it's been atrocious. It's been horrible. We've done everything humanly possible. And now we're developing a plan B because this is not going to end just because Biden decides to pull us out on the 31st. We will continue doing this in other ways, which I can't describe, but we are going to be continuing to get as many Americans and at-risk Afghans out of the country as possible, even after the 31st.
Well, let me press you on that in just a moment. But before I do, you mentioned that on occasion, some of these flights that you've arranged were leaving nearly empty. Now, again, is that a function of the obstruction of the State Department and or the Defense Department?
Absolutely. I don't narrow it down. I just say the Biden administration's obstruction because it comes from the top. So I was in direct coordination with one of the senior security guys from the State Department there, and he was blaming DOD. DOD, you know, well, who do they take their orders from? I don't know. So I thought it was the president and the White House.
Yeah. And Paul,
we've had luck with some of our guys.
When you look at the problem on the ground, and you mentioned that you've done some personal vetting, which is to your credit, how confident are you that
everyone that gets put into our system through me, for example, actually through our system, but I definitely am careful. They have to send me passport IDs, embassy IDs, letters, certificate, all photos, all sorts of documentation to show me that they are who they say they are and that they have a proven link to the United States government or are at risk and why. Most of the people have been referred to me by military guys or ex-military guys who are saying, this is my TERP, this is my translator, please help him. So, I've gotten a lot of that. And so we vet them and they have to document everything in our online secure form. They put all that stuff in there and then we go through and scrub that some more. Now, people are going to get through. This is an emergency. It's a catastrophe. We know. But then, you know, they're going to third countries. They're not, our people aren't going to the United States. They're going to third countries. Then they get checked again. And, you know, so there's multiple levels of checking. But, you know, we're doing the best we can in an absolute catastrophe, that this humanitarian disaster. But we do vet. We do vet very carefully as much as we can.
From what you and your team are seeing, is a similar effort to vet the Afghans being made by others?
One report that said that one ISIS, supposedly potentially ISIS affiliated person, you know, had been found through the secondary screening in Qatar, you know, again, very sort of, well, maybe kind of, sort of, could be. That, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot more.
I've seen a report that 100 out of 7,000 have actually triggered watch list, concerns.
That's why we have them, you know, so, you know, they're not leaving Qatar until they get checked again. So, you know, we do a first level screening, which is the best we can. And then, but I can see the people that are being sent to us and we're sending around. My guys will send me a text, you know, via secure signal, and I'll get, you know, photos and even the ones that I haven't necessarily worked with, I'll see them and everyone is doing the same thing. They're like, okay, here's this guy and here's his documentation. And they'll show ID card, letter, certificate, photos, blah, 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 passport, and then say, okay. And at this point, regardless, I mean, initially we were, you know, doing a lot more, you know, Afghan government officials, people that were very high risk that way, and they were very well known. As we go down the chain, we're just focusing right now on the highest risk. So usually the people best documented that we know for sure were very closely tied to the U.S. are going to get priority to get any kind of...
Paul, let me switch gears because I there's another topic that I want to make sure we cover. And first, by way of segue, let me say thank you for what you and your folks are doing to try to help in this disaster situation, to save lives
and an honor and a duty for me.
Our, you know, our own personnel as well as those who've faithfully worked with us. Let me turn to a topic that prompted me to reconnect with you. In fact, I caught a very important article in the Epoch Times on the 11th of August, in which you were prominently featured, talking about a threat vector, the way I think of it, of the Chinese Communist Party that generally is not getting anything remotely like the attention that it requires. And that is the ambitions of Xi Jinping, Chinese dictator, to dominate space and what that would mean, were they successful, for us here on the Earth, as well as in terms of our equities in the high frontier. Talk, if you would, sort of at the 30, if I could say 30,000 foot level or 30 mile level, as the case may be.
22,000 mile geosynchronous level.
There we go. Let's go to geosync and take stock of, first of all, why is it so important who actually has both assured access to space and, to the extent they can, the ability to determine who else has access and use of that domain?
Well, you know, I am also surprised by it, because this is one of my key topics, and I talk about it and I post on it, for example, on LinkedIn, and it rarely gets the kind of attention and views and traction that other topics that I discuss or you know, write about get. And I'm always surprised, because to me it's an interesting and fascinating area, space, you know, and space
and
warfare,
high stakes.
And people just aren't paying attention. But in China's case, I mean, they were nowhere in space 8 years ago. I mean, you know, and now they're, you know, they have a moon base on the dark side of the moon, and we have no idea what they're doing there because they're out of sight and out of visibility. They're developing their space station. They're going to Mars. They've got landers on the Mars. They are doing things that are just amazing and exponentially growing. And why is it important? Because the United States, not them, Not anybody else, really. The United States is the sole global superpower that is absolutely, totally, 100% dependent on space to operate on a global scale.
That's a military missiles. Yeah, that's a military matter, but it's also a commercial one.
Military.
Yeah. Talk first about the military, and then about how important to us our commercial uses of space are.
I just think to the Chinese, everything is dual use, as we've talked about. So, you know, they in that way, they have cover. They say, oh, there's civilian this and civilian that. Everything that they're developing for space is military focused, and you know, it can have applications for civilian use, but their primary interest is military, because they have seen that our
and it's run by the military, right?
Well, they, some of them may not be, but it doesn't matter, because they're either coordinated or led by covertly by the military. So, but the United States is absolutely dependent. I mean, the Chinese did a study, and they pointed out that during recent conflicts, the United States has depended 80, 90, 70, 90% on space for all the ISR and intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and communications with troops. Everything is dependent. And if they can deny us that communications and these capabilities, we are literally, you know, castrated. So the most powerful military in the world can't go anywhere, can't fight, can't communicate without space. So
it's rather critical.
Many, you know, aircraft or carriers we have across there, if they can't communicate and get intelligence from our satellites, it doesn't matter. We're going to be fighting a World War II battle with the Chinese on their turf, where they have local assets that can compensate for not having assets in space.
On the flip side, there is a similar dependency. Again, most of us are unaware of it, for our civilian economy on use of space. I'm thinking notably, but not exclusively, of for example, GPS. Just talk briefly about that and what it would mean for businesses, banks, the financial sector, and the like, were we to lose, you know, the use of those satellites for, you know, synchronizing transactions and otherwise, you know, making business run.
Well, I'll be honest with you that, you know, that's a fascinating topic that I haven't spent enough time to be talking about as intelligently as I would like. But it's not, you know, but let's just look at, I mean, I know that the average kid nowadays can't get across the street without his GPS telling him where to go. I mean, They don't even sell maps. They don't even sell maps anymore. Please, you know, you got to go online to order. Every gas station in the world used to have them. Now you got to go online, special edition, and order a map. And most people don't know how to read them. So just tell me, how are you going to get to the supermarket, you know, without your GPS? Just think of it that way. Or how is, you know, a FedEx going to track its ground stuff without GPS? So yes, economically we are very dependent and civilian wise on GPS. But I go back to the military stuff because our military is as dependent or more, and there's the rub. The Chinese are not only looking to disrupt our GPS system and disable it or block it, keep it. They're developing their own version of it themselves, so that they don't have to rely on our U.S. Western GPS system. So they're developing their own autonomous system that's coming online, so that they will have their own alternative as they do with everything else.
So if they choose to take down our GPS, they will still be able to operate with theirs. So this brings me to the various techniques that the Chinese are developing, and not just developing, but actually operationally testing and deploying, that can give them control of space. It can neutralize our satellites, whether it's things like GPS or more, you know, critical intelligence, you know, surveillance and reconnaissance.
All our surveillance satellites, all our reconnaissance satellites are at risk. And they have developed across the board. I mean, unlike us, who are, you know, battling every day for continuing resolution or budgets that we don't, you know, every day we don't know what we're going to get from today to tomorrow, and it's going to change. They have a plan for 2049 or 2045 or 2030, and they just say that's it. We're focused, and they just get there, and all the resources of the state are available for it, and they set the goal. It's a national goal. It incorporates everything in the national economy and their infrastructure to get that goal, strategic national objective, and one of them is to be able to, number one, keep us from controlling space, and eventually by 2045, I think they've said, is for them to dominate space. What are they doing right now? Everything. They're developing surface to space missiles that are capable of direct kill, kinetic strike on our satellites, especially low Earth orbit satellites. That's a given. They're developing beam weapons. They have the beam weapons. They have these missiles that can blind and disable our satellites. So they don't have to destroy it, but with a laser and beam weapons from ground space places, which we've identified, they can simply, you know, blind our satellites. The satellite doesn't have to be destroyed. It just doesn't have to work. And if it can't see and it can't transmit, it's dead. It might as well be dead. And these things, the missile, not so, but the beam weapon is a little bit sort of, you know, deniable. It's a little harder to prove they did it. And without a destroyed satellite, it's harder for us to prove that something was actually done. The other thing is cyber. Their big focus, and they've integrated their cyber into their strategic support forces, which includes their space command and other forces, because they think, you know, we need to be able to take out these capabilities on the ground in the U.S. by hacking them, by jamming them. They've also bought and acquired numerous international satellite jamming systems that they've developed. So they can jam our communications, they can jam our satellites, they can hack our systems to you know, aggressively stop us from being able to communicate. They can blind our satellites, they can take them out with missiles, and they are now developing also, they've got a robotic satellite which can come up to our satellite and grab it with an arm and you know, crush it or break it or pull it in and capture it. So they're doing that as well. So the number, and then now they're developing it for you know, geosync orbit as well. So the full range of capabilities for reaching our satellites all the way to geosynchronous orbit, they're developing and working on. And they've also got satellite killers.
That's what I was going to ask you about as well.
Possibly,
yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about these micro satellites and Klingon satellites, I guess you might call them, that they've also been developing.
Well, the one interesting one that we've seen, and they said it cleaning up space debris, you know, but they created thousands of pieces of space debris when they blew up one of their own satellites as part of one of their tests. They're not going to have a satellite with a robot arm picking up trash. Guarantee you. They're going to have that satellite with that robot arm, you know, lining up with our satellites, grabbing them and breaking them. And then they have other satellites that we expect that they have, you know, explosive laden, and they can get them to just simply zoom in on our satellites and just, you know, hit the kill, and they'll be able to blow up next to them. And by the way, in space, you don't actually have to hit them. you know, all you do is got to get close because they're very sensitive objects, and you know, getting some shrapnel into them will probably disable them just as good as destroying them. So,
especially if the shrapnel is moving at very high speeds, which that typically is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of these satellites can be downed by microscopic pieces of space debris. So, if they get something exploding close by, they're as good as gone. So, they're developing all these things. They're working on they've said that they're talking to the Russians about code development of a space base. They want to get boots on the ground before we do, though. You know, if we follow Trump's plan, we would be there in 2024 and we would win that battle. And it's very important that we do. But if we don't,
is on the moon you're talking about?
Yep. The Russians and the Chinese together have already announced that they're going to try and develop a space base together. In addition to this robotic presence they have there right now, or this, you know, one presence they have on the dark side right now. So I'm very concerned because the Russians, you know, they're strapped for cash. We've done a lot of damage to them with sanctions, but they still have operational experience that the Chinese don't have. So the Chinese have money, resources, and all this new tech that they're developing, but they don't really, they've never done it. So, and the Russians have been doing it since the Soviet days. So they have all this expertise and they can piggyback together. One of my bigger concerns is, you know, if they tag team to do damage to us in a conflict, that would, you know, add to the risk.
And there is evidence that is exactly what they have in mind, that there is a strategic relationship that has been developing and involves, among other things, exercises of joint attacks against our country. So I think this is not a stretch by any means. You know, one of our colleagues, Richard Fisher, back on the 25th of of March of this year, wrote a piece for the Center for Security Policy entitled "In Space, China Seeks Galactic Hegemony." Would you agree with that as the purpose of all of this? Ultimately, seem to call the Earth-Moon system domination and control is the unequivocal ambition of the Chinese, and the implications of them achieving it would be very dire for us in all the ways that you've mentioned.
Well, if we don't understand that the CCP China, I like to refer to them because it's, you know, people get confused. Like China, the people, not China, the people, the
regime party, this Chinese Communist Party,
new evil empire. It is the USSR on steroids. I mean, the Soviet Union, as threatening as it was, and it was, you know, we were in that Cold War fighting that battle that had to be won, but they never had one third of the economy of the United States. The Chinese not only have almost equivalent to economy, potentially, you know, depending on who's counting, it might be soon bigger, but it's definitely on par and getting there rapidly, and they may surpass us. So you have we've never had to deal with a country that has an economy as powerful as America. So, you know, we've always been used to dealing with threats that are not, you know, we output, you know, 50,000 aircraft in a year in World War II. I mean, we were the great arsenal of democracy. Well, we're not anymore, relatively speaking. And the Chinese absolutely are Hitler, Stalin combined. You know, they are like, we want global hegemony. We want to be the superpower of the world. They're not, you know, they're not shy about it. I mean, we just had some, I just had reports from some folks, American military officers, that were doing some training in some place, and they ran into Chinese officers, and the Chinese officers told them, and this is overseas, you know, we're coming after you. I mean, they weren't even joking.
Keeping a secret.
We're coming after you. Yeah, they're like, we're coming after you, and we're taking you down. And they're arrogant, they're cocky, they've gotten increasingly belligerent, and they don't care. And they have every intention for global domination, and part of that involves dominating space, because they can't control the world if they can't control space. So, and it's also a prestige issue, because they are trying to set themselves up as an alternative to the United States and say, these aren't the only guys that have people in space. These aren't the only guys that can do it. We can do it too. And not only that, but we're doing it better, and we're doing it farther, and we're doing it faster.
And we will exclude those other guys. Mark my words. This is hugely important, Paul Crespo. And I'm so grateful to you for taking the time to walk us through the importance of it and the strategic, critical nature of the issue of who controls the high frontier. And if it's not us, heaven help the world. Paul, come back to us again with updates on all of this, if you would. And
you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.